activity, and basically what we're expecting is that if there's an attractive interaction for electrons that are within some narrow range of energy around the Fermi energy, then the system will condense into a superconducting state. And in order to see how that happens, we want to do the analog of Hartree-Fock for a system which has the possibility of this condensation due to attractive interaction. So we're going to do the analog of Hartree-Fock, and the way Hartree-Fock works is that you find some quadratic Hamiltonian that you know how to solve exactly, but which has parameters in it, and you use that to define a probability distribution for fermions at finite temperature, and you vary those parameters to minimize the free energy of the real Hamiltonian plus its entropy that goes with it, and the entropy is determined by the fact that you've got a quadratic Hamiltonian. And so we're going to implement that process, that Hartree-Fock approach. And the variational Hamiltonian that we use is just our old variational Hamiltonian, the top line here that we used to solve in Hartree at the level of Hartree-Fock the interacting electron problem. It works fine for repulsive interactions. But then we're adding this extra term here, which can spontaneously create or destroy pairs of electrons. This is the one that it took people almost 50 years to even think about. And they only really started thinking seriously about it after Cooper demonstrated this instability for creating pairs of bound electrons bound into Cooper pairs. So this is our variational Hamiltonian. As I said, it is a quadratic Hamiltonian, but it's not the one that maybe you're used to. And it is an exactly solvable problem, just like the harmonic oscillator is an exactly solvable problem. And so now we need to solve it. Okay, so we're doing that. And what I said is that you can solve this problem by transforming to new operators, which I've called gamma. And the gammas are linear. So say this one here, which creates a gamma excitation of or gamma fermion of wave vector k and spin up, is a linear combination of the operator that creates exactly that kind of electron plus an operator that destroys the time reverse, an electron in the time reverse state, minus k down. Okay, and these are the things that get mixed with these by this term. And the U's and the V's are going to be chosen, and actually I've got a U prime and a V prime down here. We'll get to that in a second. They're going to be chosen so as to diagonalize this Hamiltonian. So now we want to see how to do that. And the point is that these are fermion operators, just like these electron operators are fermion operators. They obey anti-commutation relations. I think I showed at the end of the last class that just the commutator of this with its Hermitian conjugate being 1 meant that u squared plus v squared should be 1. Let's go on. Okay, so that's where we are. So we want to connect the UK VK because here we've got 4 coefficients, but these are actually related. So let's see how to do that. To connect those, we note that for example, this commutator, gamma dagger minus k down with gamma dagger k up, this anti-commutator should be 0, okay? Just because they're fermions that anti-commute. So what is this? So gamma dagger sets the dagger of this equation, and this is given by this equation, so let's do that. U prime k c dagger minus k down plus v prime k star c k up. The anticommutator of that with the other one, u k c dagger k up plus vk c minus k down. That should equal zero. Now, so what do we got here? Well, the only things that have non-trivial anti-commutation relations are c dagger minus k down with c minus k down, and c k up with c dagger k up, and those are one. C dagger k up. Oh, why isn't this one starred? It should be, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, these are perilous calculations, because if you have a wrong minus sign or a wrong star, then things don't work. You're back to the drawing board. But yeah. Okay, so these are the non-trivial anti-commutators, which are one. Okay. Now, did I put in? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so, what do we get? This is equal to u prime star k vk plus vk prime star uk equals zero. Okay, so that's what's required. Now we have some flexibility in setting these constants, okay, and in particular the phase of these fermion operators is not fixed as by anything particular. So we can choose the phase of the gamma dagger, k dagger up, so that it looks just like the c dagger k up electron from which it's built. And that's equivalent to saying that the uk is real. So we can choose that. That's a choice of phase. And similarly with the uk prime, we can choose that to be real. And then, on a physical basis, I would argue that these are time-reverse states. So this is the part of gamma dagger that goes like c dagger. This is the part of gamma that goes like c. K up and minus k down are time-reverse states. So I would argue that these guys we can choose to be equal to each other, okay, just because of time reversal symmetry, basically. And so I'm going to choose that convention. Okay, so the first one is clearly just a choice of phase, and the second one is an argument based on a physical argument. And so if that's the case, then you immediately see that vk prime, you can write it this way, is equal to minus vk star. So uk prime is equal to uk by choice and argument based on symmetry, and vk prime, this one here, is minus the star of this. Okay, and that allows these anti-commutation relations to be obeyed. Okay, so that's required, basically, okay, once we've made our choices of phase. So really, that's all you need to know then. So we've got a UK and a VK that defines this. The UKs are real, and the VKs have non-trivial phases. Okay, we'll see, but for the moment, we just say, oh yeah, they're complex. So that's all we need. So basically, there's only two parameters here. In any case, we can invert these equations. What we really need to go further is the expression for the electron operators in terms of the gamma fermions. Okay, so this is just writing the electron operators now in terms of these gamma operators. So far, we haven't really done very much. But now, we're going to substitute into HV. So what have we got here? Oh, yeah. We're going to do the spin sum explicitly. You know, the alpha up and alpha down are two separate terms. So we're going to have UK gamma dagger K up minus VK gamma minus k down times uk gamma k up minus vk star gamma minus k down. What have I got here? I have written c dagger k up CK up. Yes, I have. Okay, that's one term plus. And what have I written here? I've written C dagger minus K down, C minus K down. Since K is summed over, it doesn't matter whether this is plus K or minus K, they all get summed over. So that's this. And then, again, we've got two terms for the deltas. We've got delta K, which multiplies UK gamma dagger K up minus VK gamma minus K down times vk gamma k up plus uk gamma minus k down with a dagger. And finally, and so what is this? This is delta c dagger k up, c dagger minus k down, sorry, c dagger minus k down. And finally, I'm not going to write out every step in the rest of this calculation, by the way, so don't worry. Gamma dagger k up plus uk gamma minus k down, which is c of minus k down, uk gamma k up minus vk star gamma dagger minus k down. That's it. And this is ck up. Okay, so what are we trying to do? We're trying to diagonalize the Hamiltonian. And what? How are we going to do that? By the clever choice of U's and V's. And so the strategy is to choose UK and VK so that the coefficient of, say, for instance, gamma dagger k up, gamma dagger minus k down is 0. That's what we do. And then hopefully everything else comes out in the wash. All the other non-number conserving terms also have zero coefficient. So what are those terms? What did I say? Gamma dagger k up. Oh, already I've got not quite right terms here. This must be a dagger. Everything else looks okay. So epsilon U V star. Yeah, okay. So for instance, we have this and this. We have this and this, which has to be anti-commuted. We have this with this, and we have this with this. Okay. And so okay, so by setting the coefficient of this equal to 0, we get a minus 2 because there's these two terms here and one of them has its own minus sign and the other one gets anti-commuted to give you the minus sign. Minus 2. Yes, amazing. Plus delta k uk squared minus delta star k v star k squared equals 0. Okay, now, to catch up, there's some complex numbers floating around here. In particular, delta, the gap, can be complex, and v we allowed to be complex, and that all has to come out in the wash. So let's just deal with that first. So we're going to write delta of k is magnitude delta of k times e to the I phi k. And then you can see that vk has to be of the form vk magnitude times e to the minus I phi k. How do you see that? Okay, well, let's look at this term here. Remember, we chose the u's to be real. So this term carries a phase e to the I phi from delta. Now let's look at this term. It only has a v star. So v star must have the e to the I phi. And if we look at this term here, it's got delta star, which is e to the minus I phi, but v star squared, which is e to the plus 2 I phi, and so that also carries the e to the I phi. And so every one of these terms goes like e to the I phi, if we choose v to have this phase. So that is basically the solution for the phase of V. So now, and we also remember, we also know that uk squared plus vk squared equals 1. So we can write uk is cos theta k, and vk is equal to e to the minus I phi k sine theta k. Okay, don't ask. Yeah, okay.
Do angles have any geometric
limitation? Yes. See what they are first. Yeah, they've got lots of. So now we look at the real parts of this equation. And so 0 equals minus, I'm just going to move the 2. So here we've got 2 cos theta sine theta. And here we've got delta k. And so what have we got? Cos squared minus sine squared. And so this is sine 2 theta k and this is cos 2 theta k. So I wonder how many people just like
learned every trig identity that exists when they were in high school. Most of you? Yes? No. How many didn't, actually? No, you won't admit it. Okay. It's actually made my living in first year university by tutoring trig. It's a great skill. Okay, so bottom line is tan of theta k is equal to the magnitude of the gap over the distance from the Fermi energy. Did I what? Two. Yeah. Or equivalently, what do I want to say? Sine 2 theta k is equal to delta over something that I'm going to call E of k, and cosine 2 theta k is equal to epsilon V of k minus mu over E of k. I think we can get rid of all this now. Where of the fake Hamiltonian, exactly, right. Yeah. We still haven't said anything about what delta and epsilon are. We're just saying whatever they are, we'll try to solve the problem for that. So E of k is equal to the square root So at this point, I'm not going to do all the algebra, but let me just get to some results. Unlike what we've done up till now. You can show, for instance, that dk squared is equal to a half times 1 minus epsilon V minus mu over E. And U squared, then, obviously, is equal to a half times 1 plus that. And so what these things look like is if this is mu and this is EV, VK looks like that, and UK looks like that. Now, so this is a little bit of a funny thing because remember, EV is a function of K, and delta is a function of K. And so so basically, this kind of picture makes the most sense if delta doesn't depend on k, because then this line is well defined. If just as a function of, yeah.
Or if you have an anisotropic gap, which I'll just make this cryptic statement. If you have an anisotropic gap, then you can be varying EV along a direction in which delta K is constant. Okay, then this picture makes sense. So the point is that everything happens within delta. This region here is of width delta.
On the right hand side, on the right board, like when you wrote VK is of that form, VK is easily minus I.
Oh, well, that's just how you solve this equation. You've got two things. You've got a real U and a complex V.
Yeah, but then the sign, where does that come from?
The sign.
V is just a form.
This?
Yeah.
Oh, because we right at the beginning we showed that U squared plus V squared is 1.
Oh,
okay. So pretty much, you know, whenever you have U squared plus V, you can write it as a cosine sign. Okay, it's just that then there's a complex phase because it's only the magnitude squared. So that's just a reparameterization. So whenever you have two squares out of the 1, sine and cosine.
And what about that? Capital E, K.
Oh, well, that just comes out of this. You know, whenever you have the tangent and you want to write it in terms of the sine and the cosine, you can write it that way if you take, this is the sine over the cosine, but they're not normalized. But sine squared plus cos squared has to be 1. So you have to normalize that by the square root of the sum of the squares of the numerators.
Okay. So the form of the EK comes from the normalization.
It comes from, from the fact that sine squared plus cos squared equals 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So now, basically, we've got pretty much everything we need. We've got the magnitudes of the U's and the V's. We've got the phase. We've expressed everything in terms of the parameters of the starting variational Hamiltonian. So we can now go back and substitute in to the variational Hamiltonian and see what it is completely in terms of the gammas. And for sure, I'm not going to work through that calculation in class. So I'll just tell you the answer. Where?
This
term?
Yeah.
No. This is the ground state energy. And these guys are all positive. So the ground state of this system is the vacuum for all these gamma fermions. So in the ground state of the superconductors, the number of the occupation of these states is identically zero. And the energy of the ground state is given by this sum. Okay. And then you might say, yeah, well, what's that sum? You have to sort of play around with it to get a feeling for it, but let me just show you one property of that sum. Okay, Peter? Right. What are they? Okay. Well, they're excitations from the ground state. So you might say, what's the ground state? So the ground state is this condensate of Cooper pairs. For conventional superconductors where the Cooper pairs are weakly bound, they're also strongly overlapping. So you have this Cooper pair soup. And the excitations correspond to breaking Cooper pairs. And when you do that, you end up with these gammas, like one at k and one at minus k, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's what they are. They correspond to breaking Cooper pairs. If you, you know, have become that comfortable with your ground state, then that's what the excitations are. So let me just make one observation. Because this is actually a funny sum. I mean, this sum goes from k equals 0 to infinity. So, you know, how many terms are you adding up? And what happens? So let's consider the simple case of delta k equals 0. Then there's no gap, and it should just be like your normal Fermi C if we've done things correctly. Then E is the absolute value of the distance from the Fermi energy. And this thing here is just the distance from the Fermi energy. So then E naught of 0 is just 2 And so what's the point? The point is that if this is negative, in other words, for states below the Fermi energy, then this quantity here is positive, this quantity is positive, you get a 2. You get twice a positive number with a minus sign. These things are all negative because you're below the Fermi energy, so you can bring the minus sign in. So you get that. In other words, this is the energy of, oh, and the other case is what happens when this is positive. In other words, when you're looking at a k above the Fermi energy, Ek Ev minus mu is positive. With the minus sign, this is positive, so you get 0 exactly in that case. So all the k's outside the Fermi sphere contribute 0 in that case. So this is the energy of a filled Fermi C. So that's good. That shows that if you go back to the Hamiltonian without the deltas, you just get the normal filled Fermi C. Okay. And as I said, the ground state is the vacuum for the gammas. So in other words, gamma k alpha operating on the ground state is zero. So they all annihilate the ground state. And then I think if you use this property, you can go back and show that the ground state is, in fact, the BCS wave function that I wrote down. Okay, I'm not going to do that here, but I just throw that out as a challenge for you guys. Okay, so now we've reduced our variational Hamiltonian to a very simple form, which is basically some ground state energy plus excitations that are all at positive. And, in fact, the minimum energy for one of these excitations is delta, right? Because E of k is delta. Has in, yeah.
So for delta equals to 0, we've written the from the C in terms of the
program. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think we said that in the beginning. You could build up your Fermi C, one Cooper pair at a time. If they're not interacting, they just go into the lowest energy state, and that's your Fermi C. But now, these gammas when delta is not equal to zero, the ground state is this more interesting and complicated function. Okay. So now, let's go on. The Hartree-Fock calculation Well, actually, let me just make one more statement. So if you have a system with this Hamiltonian of fermions, and you calculate its properties at finite temperature and calculate the Fermi distribution function for these gamma particles for t equals zero, t greater than zero, the expectation value, I guess, if I want to write this k alpha gamma k at finite t, we'll call f k, and it will equal 1 over e to the beta e k plus 1. And that's just the property of non-interacting fermions. They're either empty or full. At finite temperature, the relative probability is such that the distribution function is this. We did that ages ago. And these are for sure non-interacting fermions. Okay. It's also interesting to calculate we can now go right back and calculate C dagger K alpha C K alpha, which is equal to, you may recall, UK gamma dagger K alpha minus VK, how about we write it like this, minus K alpha bar, meaning the time reversed, times UK gamma K alpha minus VK gamma dagger minus K alpha bar. So, in other words, you can calculate the occupation of the original electron states for this system at some temperature by writing the electron states in terms of the gamma, the electron operators in terms of the gamma operators, and calculating these thermal averages. And remember, these things just obey this nice diagonal Hamiltonian. So things like the average of gamma dagger are zero. Okay, this is just a nice quadratic. thing. So basically, what do you get here? You get something from this, and you get something from this. And when you work through the algebra, what you get is epsilon v minus mu over e of k. You put in what the u's and the v's are, fk minus a half plus a half. This is the thermal average, yes. For this system at finite temperature, expressing the real electron operators in terms of averages of the occupations, here you get this. And this is, I think I even mentioned this ages ago, and I'll draw you the crude picture of this. I'm going to draw this versus EV, I guess. So what happens here, actually? This is a Fermi function, so it's like a step function. So even at t equals 0, this thing is 1 below the Fermi energy and 0 above it. But this thing here is a function of EV. And so basically, what it looks like is this. For low t, this width is delta. So that tells you that in the ground state or at low temperatures, and as you raise the temperature, it'll get wider. At low temperatures, you've mixed in electrons within delta of the Fermi energy. That's what I think I said that a long time ago. Okay, well, now let's go. Let's speed up. Similarly, you can calculate other quantities like C minus K down, C, what do I want, K up, which is equal to the complex conjugate of C dagger K up, C dagger minus K down, and that's equal to complex conjugate, and that's equal to delta K times F K minus a half over E of K. So if you want to finish this calculation, what you want to do implies minimize average of H, what did I call them? Naught plus H1 minus TS, that's the free energy. What are we minimizing with respect to? Anybody care to say? Quickly, because we're running out of time. We want to minimize with respect to basically this and this, the fake or variational single particle electron energies and the gap. And then implicitly, F contains all of those. Now this S is just the entropy of the gamma fermions. That's the way Hartree-Fock works. just n log n plus 1, whatever. And so do that, okay? I won't, but this is the result. And so what are they? Well, we want to know what EV of K minus mu is, and that's equal to E of K minus mu. So this is the fake Hamiltonian, and this is the real Hamiltonian, or part of it, minus 1 over N, sum over K prime and beta, V of 0 minus V of K minus K prime, delta alpha beta times epsilon v minus mu over E of k fk minus a half plus a half. That's it. Amazing. That's this equation. So now what have we got here? So this is exactly the same thing we calculated before. In other words, writing the variational single particle energy in terms of the real single particle energy plus a term due to interactions, what's different? Well, what's different, this here is essentially, I guess, the density, this. Is that this is the particle's effective interaction with the number of other quasi-particles that have been generated. So if you put this in for this, this would be exactly the Hartree-Fock result we got before, which was the end of the story in the case where there was no condensation. But now we have another self-consistent equation for the gap. That actually comes from using this expression for the expectation value of CC and C dagger. Okay. Now, I don't actually know a really quick way of doing this. If you look on the wiki, there is some notes from a draft of a book that Brooks Harris and I have, which has worked something like this out in the way that I normally do it, which involves copious use of Lagrange multipliers, because it's not so easy. If you start minimizing just with respect to epsilon and delta, you get horrendously complicated equations, and Lagrange multipliers are designed to spare you some of that grief, but actually using too many Lagrange multipliers is an affliction of its own. Another thing that people often do is they say, well, I'm not going to find the absolute minimum with respect to this EV and delta. I'm just going to assume that the kinetic energy part doesn't change at all, and then just have one equation where you minimize with respect to delta, holding this thing fixed at this. And that's, you know, enough to give you a lot of insight into, I mean, you'll get this gap equation. It's just that this E will have the starting kinetic energy of the particles. And that, I think that calculation is a lot easier to do. But so the last, yeah, Sebastian. Okay, so what this result says is that the electrons still have their own kinetic energy, plus they interact with the background of other electrons as one does in Hartree-Fock with it. Direct and exchange term, okay? And the other one says, okay, so that one's pretty standard. This thing for the gap equation basically says that the Well, it's basically writing the gap in terms of itself and the interaction which gives rise to it. Okay, it basically says that the gap results from the fact that these averages, the fact that you have a gap both leads to and results from the fact that these averages are not zero. Okay, that's one way of describing this equation. Yeah, we're going to go do all that in a second. Yeah, Peter.
This here?
Yeah.
This is the.
No.
Oh, this one here? No. That's it. Yeah, because when you break the Cooper pairs, when you have when you're at finite temperature, it's basically the interaction. Okay, so if you just have a normal Fermi C, the kinetic energy would be this. But you don't have a normal Fermi C, so your electrons are distributed in a different way. And that leads to an effective interaction between the electrons, which modifies the, remember, this is the electron dispersion relation. It modifies it, the fact that this looks like this instead of a Fermi function, even at t equals zero. So it means that the electrons don't propagate the same way that they would have if the thing hadn't condensed into a VCS state for the gas. Okay, so it's all coming from this. Okay. So let's just quickly do what Michael was suggesting. So we should note that Fk minus a half is equal to minus a half tanh of beta Ek over 2. That's just an identity. Then we're going to write 1 over n sum over k prime is going to go to, just to cut to the chase here, density of states times the integral from minus omega to pi to omega to pi call it epsilon. So we're going to change the sum over k into an integral over epsilon, and remember that the interaction here is only non-zero when everything is within a Debye phonon frequency of the Fermi energy. So we can cut off our integral here. We're taking the density of states to be effectively constant. And so then this equation can be written as delta equals n of 0 v over 2 integral from minus omega to pi to omega to pi delta over square root of epsilon squared plus delta squared tanh beta square root of epsilon squared plus delta squared d epsilon. Make our life easy. And assume, let's just say that we're only considering the case where delta doesn't depend on k, which is S wave. Okay, you can do this if you assume some angular dependence for delta. It just becomes more complicated. So basically then, so this is for S wave. So then basically delta cancels out of this equation. Call this 1. And cancel out this delta. And one is left with, that is assuming that delta is not zero, one is left with what? Oh, yeah. Okay, so now we can consider various cases, because this integral has a tanh beta in it, and so it's a little bit hard to do without Mathematica. But we can do some limiting cases. So
let's consider t equals 0, then tanh is 1. So that simplifies things a lot. And so the equation then becomes 1 equals n of 0 v over v. Where did I get rid of my 2s? I don't know. Let's not worry about it right now. 0 v over 2. Somewhere I got rid of the... We don't have time for this. Minus a half. Okay, I think that this equation I've written here is right. I have to go back and find the 2 sometime, but not now. Oh, I know. Ah, yes. Okay. Yeah. 0 to omega to pi. I take half the integral. That's the 2. D epsilon over the square root of epsilon squared plus delta squared. And that's some simple integral that you can do that says that 1 is equal to n of 0 v times the log of omega to pi plus the square root of omega to pi squared plus delta squared over delta. This is delta of 0, I should say. And then you invert this. And so first of all, you note that this is approximately 2 omega to pi over delta 0 for what's called weak coupling. In other words, if the gap is small compared to the phonon frequency. Yes? The tangent just is 1. Then what? Beta is infinity, yeah, and the tanh of infinity is 1. Right? Tanh is. So it's just 1. So then you say that delta is small compared to the phonon frequency. And so then you invert this, and basically the bottom line is delta 0 is 2 omega to pi e to the minus 1 over n of 0 v. Okay, so basically this is a little bit analogous to the binding energy of the Cooper pair. And except notice that there's a 1 here instead of a 2 because of the, that was an unphysical calculation because you put 2 electrons to protect the Fermi C here. And so this is bigger without the 2, right? Because E to the minus. So this is bigger because you let all the electrons pair up into Cooper pairs and they can do so much better. Okay, so why don't we stop there and give Rob a chance. And there's just a couple more steps in this. Okay, and then we will get to strongly correlated electrons.